Believe it or not, self-discipline is exciting. Believe it or not, self-discipline is exciting. Now, I'm going to tell you a few little facts. Not many, but just a few. For instance, anybody who goes on a boat and gets seasick wants to get seasick. Seasickness is being sorry for yourself. You don't have to be seasick. You don't ever have to be seasick. You just are in charge of your body. You're in charge of your mind. You're in charge. Hey, this is fun. Rockety roll. You know, you go on a roller coaster. You're not seasick. You're just, you know, crazy. And you're having a good time. And you get on these Ferris wheels, and you get on these things that shoot you out in the air as they go around in a circle, like these little rocket type things. And here you are out in the air hanging there. I know this thing's going to hang on there. And you're looking straight down there at the world, and you're looking straight up at the clouds. And you think, wow, this is exciting. Well, that could make you have all sorts of vertigo. Now, you go to Century City, and you ride on their tunnel thing. It's a train going through a tunnel. You get on it and you ride the train, and you go down into the water. You really don't go down the water, but you think you are. The water is all there, and it's over there, and all of a sudden, vroom, underneath you are, and you think you're underneath the water. And then you come up on the other side, and then you come around the corner and you go through a big barrel, and the barrel is rotating. And you think that the train is rotating. You're sure the train is rotating. You don't have any seatbelts on, but you're sure the train is rotating. And you get vertical. But the minute you close your eyes, it's gone. Because it's a visual vertical. It is a creative. So then you open your eyes and you say, well, the way to handle that is to concentrate on the train. I'm on the train. You don't go looking at the side. You don't go looking at the verticalism creating experience, you know. You look at the train, and you're a master. But you see, it takes being a master. Because what about these guys who ride through that all the time, who have to check it out, who have to work for that company, and they ride through these rides to make sure they're secure for the customers? Because you're dealing with people. And I mean, if somebody were injured on those things because of a malfunction, you could, you know, be charged millions of dollars because people sue just wildly, you know. So, and they get it. So the maintenance has to be done. So maintenance is a very high priority in those fair park rides. So you're pretty secure. Rides that have a problem are very few and far between. Even the transient rides that come to town and set up their little circus thing and their little rides, you don't hear people having problems with it. You don't hear people having crashes in these little circuses because they don't expect it. They always surround themselves with the pure white light of love. And when they don't, which happens occasionally, then they have the vertigo. Then they have the feeling of being crushed. They have the feeling of all sorts of mental sensations. Everything is in the mind. Even the physical objects that we bump, the table we touch, or whatever we're doing, it's all in the mind. It has no objectivity outside of the mind. You say, well, it's an object, and it has objectivity, it has touchability, it has substance to it. No, it's only in the mind. We will one day discipline ourselves so beautifully that we'll get back to the realization that we are number one, and we are the creator of our world, and we did create everything that exists. And we created this table. We created the elements out of which the table is made. It's not just sand. It is basically sand. It's silicon, and it's melted, and it becomes this glass. But there are hardeners that are put into it. There are strengtheners that are put into the glass. There are all sorts of things that are put into the glass, because otherwise the glass could be quite brittle. There are purifiers that are put into the glass. And this is our mind. That didn't come that way. It was our mind that created it that way, and we brought it forth. Now, the fact that the sand was already here, well, we did that in another dimension, another time schedule. We created all these things. Don't forget, you've lived life after life after life. You've been on dimension after dimension after dimension. And every dimension you come to, you have pre-created it. You have pre-created it to be exactly what you want it to be. And if it's fun, then that's how you created it. And if it's misery, then that's how you create it. And if it's a joy, then that's how you create it. If everybody's having a ball there, that's how you create it. If everybody's having troubles there, that's how you created it. Now, let's just take poverty. You go down into the slums, and that's just a word meaning low-income individuals who don't have money to maintain their yards and money to maintain, they don't have money to eat half the time. But they're low-income people who are not working, basically. They're on welfare, most of them, and they feel that the country owes them a living and stuff. And they got talent, they got ability, they could get out and work, they could get, but they don't really have to work. Now, John is in Switzerland, and he's thinking, now, I'm going to take care of this place. Well, now, why is he going to take care of that place? Are they going to pay him to take care of that place? If they're going to pay him, he's got money to eat, doesn't he? Then what is he talking about? He doesn't have any money to eat. See, he's already got money to eat. He just forgot that. He just forgot that because he thought it might be too minuscule. But regardless, just say you find a place to live. Now, let's just paint the picture right. You're going to live in this glorious mansion, this glorious, it's even on the internet, it's a glorious estate. It's a villa, the Pompilio, whatever it is. It's a fabulous place. And John's going to live there for 2 months. He's going to take care of the place. Now, do you think that living in a place like that, you wouldn't have opulence on every side of you? That you wouldn't have plenty of food? These English gentlemen who are without funds, they're always wearing the finest clothing. They're always driving the finest car. They're always eating the finest food. They're always going to the finest restaurant. I mean, what more do they want? They've got everything, and the finest house. They live in their mansions, you know, and their castles and stuff. And they say, well, we don't have any income. We don't. How do you do all the things you're doing? I mean, you're really a magical being. You are really God personified in the form of you, of man. You're number one. You're fantastic. I mean, who else could do that? Everybody, of course. But who else is doing that? Well, I got to go to work. I got to earn a living. I got to have money coming in. If I don't have money coming in, I'm out of luck. You know, I'm in no business. You know, and that's stupid. The money is here in your mind. The abundance, the living conditions are all here in your mind. Everything in the world is right here in your mind. Now, what kind of creator are you? Are you creating a world that needs energy problems? Are you creating a world that needs ecology problems? Are you creating a world that needs poor people? That needs people who are destitute, people who are sick, people who are filling the hospitals? I can only tell you, you are in the minority. Because your good thoughts have created the majority. If everybody was sick and everybody needed hospitals, we would have a lot more hospitals. We would have an equal number of hospitals to the number of people, wouldn't we? That is, you know, beds, hospital beds. We'd have an equal number of hospital beds, and we'd have an equal number of nurses. Nursing would be the greatest profession on earth because so many people needed it, but it's not. Nursing is one minor profession, and in some cities, they are promoting health. Look at Europe. Europe, for years and years and years, promoted the Krankenhaus, the house of the sick, the house of the insane asylum. You ever heard of that? The house of the insane, the house of the sick. Oh, my God. Say, the Gesundheitshaus, the house of wholeness. Wouldn't it be wonderful to call our hospitals the house of wholeness? Wouldn't it be wonderful to call our mental institutions the house of balance? The house of understanding? The house of peace, of mind? Ooh! You know what would happen? They'd be empty. They'd be empty. And then we could use them for something else. I don't know what you'd use them for, but you could use them for something else, maybe for schools, you know. But that'd be interesting. But really, what are we creating? If there are 6 billion people on Earth plus, there are maybe 100 million people maybe 1 billion, but 100 million people who are sick. Now, that's a minor number. That's a very tiny number. How many 100 millions are there in 6 billion? A lot. A lot. And maybe it's not even 100 billion, 100 million. We ought to look it up sometime and find out how many people are sick at one time in the world. They have statistics of this stuff. Isn't it fascinating? But what my point is, the majority, the super majority, the 95% of the people in the world are healthy. 95% of the people in the world live harmonious lives. 95% of the people in the world live lives with marriages that do not fail. 95% of the people who in the world live with children who are good children, who are wonderful children, who are obedient and who are concerned about learning self-discipline as they're growing up. They learn self-discipline by putting their clothes away, by doing the dumb things around the house, by not putting their shoes on top of the case, but in the case. You understand? I mean, how can you teach if you don't practice it yourself? You say, well, Herb, then you should do it. Part of my teaching is not doing it. And I have to train myself not to do it because it's my natural thing to do it. Naturally, I'm a very orderly person. And for me to be disorderly, it's a thing that I really have to work on. And then to make it look real, too, so that you don't really, so you don't say, ah, Herb, you're just doing that because you're trying to shake us up. I don't want you to think that. I want that to be happening. But anyhow, self-discipline is a wonderful thing. And it comes when you realize you first discipline your thoughts. To think positive, joyous, beautiful thoughts. To think thoughts that are supportive of where you want to go, of what you want to do. And keep them to yourself. Don't walk around like a prissy nose, you know, up in the air saying, I'm better than you are. I'm the master of my thoughts. No, you aren't. As soon as you say there's somebody who's not master of their thoughts in your world, you're not master of your thoughts. Hey, that's tough, you know. That's tough. If you're master of your thoughts, you see everyone master of their thoughts. If you're master of your thoughts, you see everyone healthy, everyone happy, everyone abundant, everyone enjoying each other in perfect harmony. That's a responsibility. But the self-discipline starts with you, with your thought, with your mind, with your desire for yourself, with your goal. And I could go on with this wonderful point of view for another 12 hours. But instead of my going on with this point of view, you go on developing self-discipline within yourself by being master of every thought you think. Because you're wonderful. You are the 95%. Actually, you're really only the 1/1,000,000% because you're on your master path and you know it. So, I love you.